I'm Heidi Ferdin with the University of New Mexico, and I'm going to be discussing the determinants of health for people who are paralyzed in the United States. And this slide is just to acknowledge our funders, ACL, the Administration for Community Living, and the Centers for Disease Control. Okay, so in defining the problem, that began long ago with Michael Fox, who is currently at CDC, but previously at the University of Kansas. And he identified gaps in existing surveillance systems for people with paralysis. So we weren't able to get out disease-specific information for people with disabilities. It's just sort of all lumped together, right? And then that prevented us from looking further at disparities between groups. So we're trying to remedy that problem. So disability is frequently defined using medical conditions rather than a functional status approach. We wanted that to change as well. And the population-based sampling didn't use estimate prevalence, or it wasn't population-based. So for our study, what we did to remedy the problem was we hired a survey company, a polling company out of Pennsylvania called International Communications Research. We created an enormous survey with over 500 variables, and they reached out to 70,000 households and collected data for 14 months. And the survey was done in both English and Spanish. We used both landlines and cell phones, and then we stratified based on use of landline or cell phone. And the goal here was to understand health and quality of life for people with paralysis. And all the items on the survey were taken from other existing surveys, like the American Community Survey, BRFIS, which is the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, and also the National Health Interview Survey and others. In addition to determining prevalence of paralysis, we also included six domains on the survey. So we looked further into health status, so looking at self-reported general health status, utilization of health care, how often are you going to the doctor, do you have someone you consider your primary care physician, how often are you hospitalized, those types of questions. Then we also looked at secondary conditions, and some of those would be contractures, UTIs, pressure sores. We also looked at barriers to accessing healthcare. So this was transportation, do you have difficulty getting to and from the doctor's office, and also the design of the building, are you able to actually get into the building and easily get to the places you need to within the doctor's office. We looked at financial aspects of healthcare. So this included not only do you have health insurance, what types of health insurance, but do you have any unmet needs? What types of durable medical equipment are you using? And we included power chairs, manual wheelchairs, and there was a full list of about 20 other pieces of equipment that they could identify. And are you receiving the equipment that you need, and if not, why? And then we also looked at comorbidity, such as diabetes, cancer, heart disease, that could be occurring along with paralysis and makes things more difficult. So it took a group of about 25 of us 2 days in D.C. to come up with this definition. We created a functional definition of paralysis. So this definition is: paralysis is a central nervous system disorder resulting in difficulty or inability to move the upper or lower extremities. And to get at this on the survey, we used a series of questions, the first of which was, do you have difficulty moving your arms and legs? And then we asked what caused that inability to move your arms and legs. So it could have been an accident, such as spinal cord injury or traumatic brain injury, or it could be a series of these diseases. And this is by no means a conclusive list of all of the diseases and conditions that could possibly cause paralysis, but these were the ones that were captured on the survey. So we didn't capture anyone with Friedreich's ataxia, Chiari malformation, and those were not picked up, but we know that those do exist out there, and they're just at rare or low rates. The top four causes of paralysis that we noticed in our survey in this order were stroke, spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis, and cerebral palsy. And this is our survey implementation team, just to give you an idea of all the people involved in creating the survey. And also I wanted to thank another person from the CDC, Elizabeth Courtney Long. She's a statistician, and she's been helping me verify all the data. Okay, so this is a look at primary care provider crossed with people who are paralyzed versus just the U.S. general population. So the first column shows people who are paralyzed, and then the second column is the U.S. population. And what you notice here is that people who are paralyzed have a greater proportion who have a primary care provider, and they also have a greater proportion of health insurance, a greater proportion. So 99% of people with paralysis have some form of health insurance. So for this first cut, looking at disparities, we chose the independent variables income and education. And for our dependent variables, we looked at whether or not the person with paralysis had a primary care provider. We looked at their general health status. The number of days that their physical health was not good. Number of days that mental health was not good. And then number of days they were unable to do their usual activities. And in those cross-tabulations, we found some relationships that were not significant, and those are included here. Income and number of days that physical health was not good, education and having a primary care provider, education and general health status, and education and physical health. Okay, so now we're going to look at a series of cross-tabulations, and this is income versus having a primary care provider. And each of the rows add up to 100%. This is all within paralysis. So what you'll notice here, if you look at the last column, which is the highest income category of 50,000 or above, is that 24% people with paralysis having a primary care provider are making 50,000 or more. And then we see kind of the inverse relationship of that. If you look at the less than 15,000 column, the first column, you'll see that 40% show no primary health care provider or making less than 15,000. Okay, so when we asked, would you say that your general health is excellent, very good, poor, or fair? These are responses we got based on income. I collapsed health status into a binary variable so that excellent, very good, and good were together, and then fair and poor were collapsed together. And we're seeing the same relationship here. If you look at the last column, people making greater than $50,000 a year, 31% are saying that their health or reporting is excellent, very good, or good. Okay, and this table, we're looking at the relationship between income and the number of days that mental health was not good. So the question is at the bottom, thinking about your mental health, which includes stress, depression, and problems with emotions, for how many days during the last 30 days was your mental health not good? And it seems a bit arbitrary, but the cutoff is 14 days, and a lot of research has gone into this to show that people with 2 weeks or more of unhealthy days is considered severe, and less than 2 weeks is less severe or not severe. So if you look at the final column of 50,000 or above, you'll notice that 27% of people with paralysis are reporting fewer days of unhealthy mental health days. And we see the inverse relationship in the less than 15,000 category. Okay, this table shows the relationship between income and usual days that you were unable to do your activities. So the question is, during the past 30 days, how many days did poor physical or mental health keep you from doing your usual activities, such as self-care, work, or recreation? And you'll see that people in the highest income category, again, are reporting that they have fewer days when they're unable to do their usual activities. And then we see the inverse of that again in the less than 15,000 category. Okay, now we're going to switch and look at education. So this table shows the relationship between education and days that mental health was not good. So it's the same mental health day question. And what we see is that people who are earning a college degree are reporting fewer days that their mental health was not good. So we have 29% of people earning a college degree reporting fewer mentally unhealthy days. And this table shows education and usual activities. And again, we see for people earning a college degree that 25% of those are reporting fewer days that they are not able to do their usual activities. Okay, so to conclude, there's a positive correlation between income and general health status. We found a positive correlation between income and presence of a primary care provider. Positive correlation between education and mental health. And positive correlation between education and the number of days you're able to do your usual activities. So this is such a rich data set. We have a lot of next steps up ahead for us. We have 4 or 5 articles in the works coming out of this data set. What we'd like to do is compare rates of preventive care screenings of people with paralysis to the general population. So are they getting, you know, their mammogram screenings and their blood cholesterol screenings as often as people in the general population? And we know that that's not true, but we can delve further into that and look at odds ratios. We'd like to look at odds ratios also for access to healthcare and secondary conditions. So in other words, if you're able to access healthcare, do you report fewer secondary conditions? That's what we would expect, but it'd be interesting to look at that. And we'd like to further examine the relationship between access to healthcare, use of preventive care, which we would think of as someone who's healthier, and are they reporting that their health status is better overall? And that's all. Thank you very much.